From the Danker Studio on Library Square, this is The Rundown, an exploration of local news, events, and issues that matter to you. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up later on the show, we're going to have a conversation with Lane Beatty, president of the Salt Lake Chamber, to hear about the issues the Salt Lake business community wants to see addressed at the upcoming session of the Utah State Legislature.
We have recommended now for, I think, the last 6 years that we ought to index the gasoline tax that we already pay, just meaning that we want to make sure that it stays at the same level. Because what's happened since 1997, which was the last year we increased motor fuel tax, the purchasing power is just like your home budgets. And in your home, it costs more dollars to support the same budgets that you had back then today.
That, plus your summary of the day's top local headlines just ahead on The Rundown here on KCPW. And thanks once more for tuning in to KCPW's news and issues show, The Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Coming up later, we're going to have a conversation with Salt Lake Chamber President Lane Beatty about the Chamber's priorities at the upcoming legislative session, namely air quality, infrastructure, and education. But first up, we have these headlines. A federal judge has struck down Oklahoma's gay marriage ban, ruling that it violates the U.S. Constitution. U.S. District Judge Terrence Kern handed down the ruling Tuesday in a lawsuit filed by two same-sex couples. Kern's ruling was immediately stayed pending appeal, which means that same-sex marriages won't immediately happen in Oklahoma as they did in Utah. The gay couples had sued for the right to marry and to have a marriage from another jurisdiction recognized in Oklahoma. Kern ruled on a constitutional amendment approved by Oklahoma voters in 2004, analogous to Utah's Amendment 3, that says that marriage in Oklahoma shall consist only of the union of one man and one woman. Kern says the amendment violates the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Clause. Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt's office did not immediately have a comment on the ruling. Utah's Elections Office is recommending dozens of changes to state laws based on a four-month investigation of former Attorney General John Swallow. The Utah Lieutenant Governor's Office, which oversees elections, presented the report to state legislators Tuesday. Republican Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox announced in November that his office found Swallow likely violated campaign disclosure laws during his 2012 campaign. Cox's office said Swallow deliberately withheld information about business interests and tens of thousands of dollars in income from his campaign documents. The proposed changes in state law include expanding the definitions of business and other outside interests, such as second jobs and family trusts. Cox says he hopes the changes will prevent similar problems and questions about candidates in the future. Swallow resigned in November, and Cox declined to pursue any penalties against him. Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams delivered his State of the County address on Tuesday. From the outset, he characterized the county as being on a trend of growth and transformation, saying the community needs to shape the future we choose or react to the future that chooses us. For more, here's KCPW's Ryan Cunningham.
Mayor McAdams made it clear from the beginning of his State of the County address that his speech would be about the future, namely, how the county prepares.
What is certain to me is that the future will look very different than the past. Whether that energy burns like a wildfire threatening destruction, or like rocket fuel propelling us toward the stars, it depends on the choices we make today.
One such choice proposed by McAdams was updates to the Clark Planetarium in downtown Salt Lake City. Standing next to a moon rock and a model of a NASA rocket, McAdams pointed to the planetarium as a source of inspiration for children in the community.
I believe that nothing inspires our children to imagine the future like seeing an actual moon rock. I'd encourage you to come up and see this afterwards. Like seeing an actual moon rock or a model of the next generation of rockets that will carry equipment into space, such as this one that's designed by Utah's own ATK.
McAdams also vowed to complete the Jesse E. Quinney Ballet Center, as well as most of the Jordan River Trail. In addition, he pushed for renewal of the Zoo Arts and Parks Fund, something that will be decided by voters later this year. One of the major points for McAdams' speech was reforming the way that the county works with repeat criminal offenders. He announced a new initiative called Better Futures, designed to give high-risk adults more opportunities. He described the initiative as results-based.
With better futures, we will offer the opportunity of different options for these past offenders so that they can also choose to become contributing members of our society, so that they can provide for themselves and their families, and also reduce costly trips through the revolving door of our courts and jails.
Perhaps the mayor's most emphatic point came when he discussed the new 911 merger between Unified Police Department and the Valley Emergency Communications Center. He called it a necessary step, but stressed that the arrangement still has kinks to work out.
We must finalize the selection of and move toward a single software system for 911 in Salt Lake County. It is unacceptable for a citizen of this valley in the year 2014 to sit on hold for 13 minutes, as happened last year, while confusion reigns among dispatchers who struggle with a patchwork system, especially since Salt Lake County has stepped up to fund the solution.
Except for a brief mention at the conclusion of his remarks, Mayor McAdams did not address the issue of air quality in the county. Conversely, Salt Lake City Mayor Ralph Becker made that issue the focus of his State of the City address last week. In Salt Lake City, I'm Ryan Cunningham for KCPW News.
Utah National Guard officials are worried that more than 200 people could lose their jobs if the U.S. Army consolidates its fleet of AH-64 Apache helicopters. The Deseret News reports that Utah National Guard General Jefferson Burton says the Army has proposed taking the helicopters away from National Guard units to save money. They would instead be used by active Army units only. The plan is pending approval from Congress and U.S. Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel. Burton says Utah currently has 16 of the helicopters. Utah National Guard members recently spent a year in Afghanistan doing reconnaissance work. During wildfires season, the helicopters were used to find hot spots. Burton says the U.S. is better served by having the helicopters spread across the country with National Guard units. And I'm Roger McDonough. Those are our top local headlines for the day. You're listening to The Rundown. Stay with us. And now on The Rundown, we turn to a conversation with Lane Beatty, president of the Salt Lake Chamber. Recently, Beatty sat down with Becky Lockhart, Speaker of the Utah House of Representatives, and with Senate President Wayne Niederhauser to discuss the legislative issues important to the Salt Lake Chamber. I caught up with Beatty earlier today to hear about that meeting and to hear about the priorities the greater Salt Lake business community wants to see addressed during this year's legislative session. Lane Beatty, thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
Pleasure to be in part of this very important discussion.
So you had a recent meeting with Speaker Lockhart and Senate President Niederhauser in which you identified some priorities the Salt Lake Chamber wants to see addressed during the upcoming legislative session. And I guess I'll just ask for our listening audience what those priorities are.
You know, there's several priorities in an overall sense. We have a policy book, which is 20 or 30 pages long, that this is filled with different policies we're very concerned about. Specifically, there were three or four that we brought up to this speaker and the president. And one of those had to do with transportation and the importance of investing in infrastructure in the state. And because it affects every citizen, every business, every entity, every visitor, all of the tourist people, everybody in the state. And so about 10 years ago, we at the chamber, I actually gave a speech to the chamber, and I said, if we allow gridlocking in Davis County, we stop economic development in Moab. And there were a lot of people who didn't understand that we're really a regional economy, and that we have to be very, very mindful of what takes place. Because if we get behind, for instance, in road construction, and all of a sudden our population grows at what it's estimated to grow with now, it will literally overtake us. And then economically, it starts to destroy our economy, not add to it. And so to us, looking at the future, those of us who are grandparents want a place that our grandkids can stay and work and have life and the quality of life that we have now. You cannot do that if you don't invest in infrastructure from a government standpoint. So we really hope that they will continue to do that. We've made some great strides in the last several years, going back into the late 1990s with the rebuild of I-15 in Salt Lake County, then completed here a year and a half ago the I-15 in Utah County, and a lot of additional roads, the West Mountain View Corridor and a lot of other things, and then adding to our tracks lines. And all of which were a very important part, and by the way, most of which were funded by the citizens with a vote of the citizens. So they're very, very supportive. Today, we're in a little bit of a dilemma where we have, because of gas efficiencies in cars, and because we have more people riding transit, we have less gallons per person being purchased, which means we have less money to be able to put into our road system. Plus, a big percentage of our dollars has always been sent to the federal government, of which we get a portion back to help build our interstate roads. That amount has been changing substantially, where today, for instance, the Utah County redo of I-15, an interstate freeway system, had zero federal dollars in it. We didn't get any money back from the federal government. That was all Utah state tax dollars.
And these were user tax. I mean, this is user tax. Yeah.
Well, you know, it came from primarily from the sources, some general fund money, but from a vote that the citizens in Utah and Salt Lake County voted on, which was an 1/8 cent increase. It came from every other source we could possibly muster together to do a great job. They built that in a very efficient way, $1.7 billion.
Right.
It had to be done. If it didn't get done, then again, it starts crimping the overall economy of the state. And so every person, even if they don't own a car, is impacted by congestion, by people who want to use transit one way or another. It affects our children, everyone. And so what we said is that we've got to find a better way. We have more efficient cars. We have less money coming from the federal dollars that we send in, and we're in a dilemma. At the same time, we also have to address health care. We have to address education, which takes about 64% of all of our tax dollars in the state, and asking, where is that going to come from? We have now had, and this isn't new, we have recommended now for, I think, the last 6 years that we ought to index the gasoline tax that we already pay, just meaning that we want to make sure that it stays at the same level. Because what's happened since 1997, which was the last year we increased motor fuel tax, the purchasing power is just like your home budgets. And in your home, it costs more dollars to support the same budgets that you had back then today.
So is it about allowing the revenue that comes in to come back up to the level that it was at?
Well, we would love to have that. The reality is that we're so far below it. Indexing is just a way to take that portion of funding that goes to transportation and trying to hold it harmless and saying, let's not at least lose any more money. Let's just raise it at the same level that inflation affects all of us as families and just keep it at the same level. So the impact to our wallets is the same percentage as tomorrow as it would be today.
So, you know, according to the Deseret News article that I read, neither Speaker Lockhart nor Senate President Niederhauser suggested that this strategy of indexing is something that would likely happen. And maybe that's partially because of political feasibility of doing so. All of the House, for example, is up for re-election in this year. But am I right to say that they said to you that an increase in the gas tax isn't necessarily in the cards this legislative session?
You know, no, that's not what I perceive. In fact, Speaker Lockhart says she doesn't think there's a big appetite for increasing taxes. Well, I served in the legislature for many years. I want you to know, never did I see 1 year that there was an appetite for the legislature to raise taxes. So it just doesn't occur. That's not what we're saying, and I don't think that's what they said. They're just saying, you know what, there's not an out source of excitement about raising taxes. It's going to be a very tough issue. The president of the Senate literally said they are looking at every avenue they can to be able to do what constitutionally they have to do, and that is balance the budget, and that's very difficult. And they've done a wonderful job at that, and I'm sure they will continue to do that. I think that it's an overused statement about, oh, it's an election year, legislators won't look at that. I happen to believe there's a lot more statesmen than politicians, meaning that I do believe that if there is an issue, that they will move forward on it. And I think that there's enough evidence that can be shown that they themselves have brought up that there is a need for us to start handling some very difficult issues.
You know, another priority that you identified in that conversation was air quality, and to a certain extent, fees on gas and air quality are tied together. The gas tax goes to pay for road improvements, but any real increase would also serve as a kind of deterrent to unnecessary driving. Does that play into your call for adjusting the tax?
Well, it does. Again, it is just part of the great big picture that we have, and you have to understand that when you stand back and you look at gas, is it good to have people have to evaluate, do I really need to drive there? Well, certainly it is. Is the use of commuter rail important? Is the use of light rail important and buses? All of it is. You can't solve the problem unless you utilize all of the assets that we have in Utah. So we as a chamber and as a business association are really taking it to a bigger level. We want to quit giving it lip service, because everybody's willing to talk about it, but what are we doing to literally reduce it? When people find out the facts, they're really shocked. When you realize that all of the air pollutants that we have in this valley, only 10 to 12% are from industry. Only 10 to 12%. You take that 10 or 12% and you probably wouldn't even notice any difference if it was zero. And so where's it all coming from? If only 10 or 12% comes from industry, we've really got to get it down to us, the people, the citizens. How do we drive? How do you have a mother sit down with her family and say, you know what, I get up in the morning, I take my kids to high school first, I come back, pick up the next load to go to junior high, I come back the next load to elementary school, then I've got to go grocery shopping, then I've got to go here, I've got to do blah, 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 blah. How many times a day does a woman or a man who's at home taking care of the affairs of the family have to go out and fire up the car, turn the ignition on? Can we do better planning as families? Can we do better planning as businesses? Can we encourage on red letter days that we have more people working from home? We want to move the dial. Let's really get into this. If the majority of all the pollution is caused by us citizens, what can we do? And that's what we're going to try to encourage.
Not just lip service. You know, both Speaker Lockhart and President Niederhauser are quoted as preferring campaigns to increase voluntary measures to address air quality programs. I'm just wondering if voluntary action, both from the business community and from individuals, you know, incentivizing that, is that enough?
Yes, it is. And I believe that it's possible. I think that when you sit around a table today and you talk about air quality, do you know who you'll get the greatest excitement about changing it? Our kids. Our kids, they're aware of the environment. They're aware that we ought to have better air quality. And so when you sit down at the table and you start talking about, well, you know, what is children, what can we do? How can we help mom not have to have so many trips a day? How can we take pride in it? I believe that it's the whole family. And I think that families, every day that get up and they look out at the valley and they see the air quality that we have, there is a way for all of us to start making a bigger difference.
We know that air quality is a health issue, but how big of an economic problem is air quality for our city? And I suppose especially in terms of attracting new business and tourism. I mean, are there any bigger impediments to business here?
Well, there are. There could be. Tax policy is one that could literally strangle a business just overnight. Education is incredibly important, because if we don't have an educated workforce, there's nothing. We will all fail. We won't have the money to do anything else. So when you say what is the priority, obviously breathing the air that we have is extremely important. But you also have to understand that for hundreds of years in this valley, air quality has been a big concern. If you go back to 100 years ago at the chamber, the number one issue in this valley was air quality. 100 years ago. Why? Because everybody was heating with coal and the air was, I mean, horrible. It was much worse than it is today. Well, does that mean, oh, well, because it was better today than it was then, that somehow that means we don't really have a problem? No. We know how many people were affected by it that they themselves didn't even know at the time. It wasn't just the clothes that mom hang out during the day that was gray because of the fact of all the coal dust. It's the fact that it was affecting people's lives and their health. We know more about that today than we've ever known. So we ought to be more concerned with it. And the reality is, it is not acceptable. And the only way we can make a change is if all of us have a plan to what we can do to help.
But in terms of attracting new businesses to the area, is it? I mean, you see it in the news all the time. It's got to have some kind of an impact.
Oh, it does. I'm very cautious about it. I'm very cautious what I read in the papers about it, because a lot of people don't realize there's a lot of our competitors around the nation who want to know why in the world Utah continues to grow at the rate that we're growing at economically. And do they know that they have air quality issues? We're terribly concerned with that. But we also want to make sure that people understand the number one reason is the workforce we have in Utah, why businesses come here and thrive. Number two is quality of life, that we do have an incredible quality of life issue here in Utah. And the 28 days that we have a year that are just not healthy days, we need to address, because we don't want those 28 days. And it doesn't matter whether I want to know that a year from now we're going to have 24 days. I want to know that we're moving in the right direction. It does have an impact. We just need to make sure that people realize that sometimes it's a very narrow window.
Moving the needle in the right direction. What are the obstacles, or what is it that you think can be done here to improve the business climate, if it needs improving?
You know, it does. We can always do things better. Certainly the air quality is an important part of that. But I just come back to education. If we have, as a state, addressed infrastructure where we're not gridlocking our roads, which would be a major problem for creating health problems, if we continue to do what we've done along those lines, then the quality of the workforce continues to be very important to us. We have a divergent and different population than we had 10 years ago in Utah. We need to make sure that when we talk about 90% of our kids reading at grade level by the end of the third grade, we're really serious about that. We believe that that is the number one issue in the state of Utah, economically, socially, in every aspect of quality of life issues. If we have that every year from now on, that 90% of our kids are going to be reading at grade level, we're not going to have to worry about 66% of our state's population having degrees or certificates. We're not going to have to worry about whether they're STEM related and they understand science, technology, engineering, and math. We're not going to have to worry about whether these people understand the value of the workplace, because I promise you it'll take care of itself, because they will then be an intellectually stimulated workforce, which will bring the quality of life to all of us.
Last question, which is a follow-up on that, is we get cited quite a bit in the news around the country for having the lowest per pupil spending in the nation, or one of the lowest per pupil spending in the nation. You identified education as a top priority, and the legislature doesn't always have it up that high. It's another one where there's lip service, but you don't necessarily see the spending. I'm not exactly certain the number, but you cited 64% of taxes going to education. Do we need to see more spending on education here?
We do. We do, but I don't want to have anyone perceive that I agree with what you said about education, that we do. You have to understand that that's a numbers game, a numbers game that is quoted oftentimes by people who really want us to have more funding, but it isn't accurate to say that's our problem with education in Utah. We spend less per person, but we spend more per individual on education than most states. So we have a greater effort. Now, that effort changed since the mid-1990s to today, because the average income per household went way up in the state of Utah. A lot of people don't realize that. So when we compare the amount of money that we spend in education, we spend less than we used to spend because of the fact that we have more income. Our income went up in the state of Utah. But understand that when you're talking 64 to 65% of the state's income taxes going into education, that's a nice commitment. Is it enough? No. So we do believe that it needs to be more. But understand that the reason why that statistic will always be the same: we produce more children than any place in America. We have more children. It costs us more to educate and grow those children. And that's why we want to emphasize the importance of that fourth or third grade reading. If we invest in that, we'll have to invest less from that time on in those people's lives. And so I do support the philosophy that we do have to find some additional money, but we ought to concentrate it on where it's going to make the biggest difference. And the statistic of the amount of money per capita that we spend, because we just have large families, we always have, we always will, that's going to be a statistic that's going to be with Utah forever, even if we put substantial new money into it.
All right. Well, Lane Beatty, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Pleasure to be with you today. Thanks.
That was my conversation earlier today with Lane Beatty, president of the Salt Lake Chamber. You can find this and all of the interviews we feature on our program at our website, kcpw.org. I'm Roger McDonough, and you're listening to The Rundown. We'll be right back. And thanks once more for listening to The Rundown here on KCPW. Our show was produced by Lauren Colucci. We had additional help from Jesse Ellis and Mr. Tyler Ford. Our theme music was composed by Tim Myers. Tomorrow, we'll keep looking at ways of addressing our air quality issues with Brian Mensch, president of the Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is at KCPW Rundown. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for listening. The Utah Business Report and Marketplace are next.